certain elements of the mourning and the surrounding events around the Churban are almost predictable. And I say they're almost predictable. What I mean by that is they fit into a system which we're able to analyze, to understand. We're going to look today at certain things which are predictable, which are far less interesting. And we're mainly going to focus on one element which is not predictable and try to explain it. In order to try to explain it, we're going to end up, I think, getting to a very, very broad canvas in order to then see how this particular point fits in. The first source, and I know some of you apparently don't have it, so I'll try to explain as much as possible. The first source is the Mishnah, which tells us, Chamisha devarim iru at avoteinu b'shevasa b'tamuz, v'chamisha b'tisha b'av. B'shevasa b'tamuz, nishtabru haluchot, v'mutal hatamid, v'havkaha ha'ir, v'saraf afutumus et hatarah, v'mit selam b'hechel, v'hichal. The impression that the Mishnah wants to leave us with is both on Tisha B'Av, which we're not going to speak about, but Shavasa B'Tamuz we will, is that these are dates that there is a recurring echo. It's like an ominous drum which beats, and we hear it year after year after year. It doesn't come as a surprise to us. Unfortunately, when bad things happen on Tisha B'Av, be it the Spanish Inquisition, be it events during the Holocaust, and of course things going further back in history. It's a date which the Gemara says, even though there's a debate about the propriety of having the four fast days today, the Gemara ends up saying, if it's a time of peace, of course there's an argument, what is peace? If there's a time of fighting, there's an argument, what is fighting? But when it comes to Tisha B'Av, it says, no, here there's no negotiations. Because on Tisha B'Av, so many bad things have happened and continually happened that it's already established that this is a time of sadness and therefore appropriate to fast. And by the way, this is particularly appropriate for this generation. There are so many reasons that we can point at today as to why we're blessed and to why we're fortunate and why we are back in this land. But still, we understand that we're not quite there. It's not exactly the way that it should be. And therefore, Tisha B'Av continues. When it comes to Shavasa B'Tamuz, the Mishnah tells us the same thing. All of these horrific things which happened. But of course, there's one thing which is missing, which the Mishnah fails to note, which you'll say to me, well, it's obvious, even to the point maybe they didn't have to say it. And that is that the Jews worshipped a golden calf. The golden calf is missing from the Mishnah. The breaking of the Luchot is there. But if you were to ask me, which is worse? That we worship the golden calf or that Moshe broke the Luchot? So again, you can begin to think about it and to debate it. But ostensibly, the fact that they worship the golden calf, that's something which is missing from the list. And to understand the entire list and the power, they're standing at the foot of Har Sinai. They received the revelation. God spoke. Moshe has been a little bit late, which, by the way, for most Jews is not an issue. So someone's going to blame the Yekkis now for the... Moshe is a little late, and they decide they need to make a calf, to make some kind of god that they can say took us out of Egypt. And I just want, again, just to think about the cognitive dissonance which must have been necessary for them to do it that day. That morning they woke up. What did they eat? They ate man. What bracha did they make on the man? Baruch atah Hashem, Elokein Malcham, Hamotzi Lechem Min HaShamayim. Oh, bread comes from heaven. Where is Moshe? Moshe's up in heaven. Moshe's by the factory where they're making this stuff. Right? Again, just think a second. But that's the beauty of free will, that we're able to completely ignore and say, we point out a calf, make a calf, say, this thing took us out of Egypt. And you have to say, what are they, crazy? Now let's pause for a second. There is, and the one who spelled this out is the Beit HaLevi, I'm not going to quote it here, but there is a general association between two major dates that took place in the desert, 17th of Tammuz, Tisha B'Av. 17th of Tammuz is the golden calf, Tisha B'Av is the spies. The Beit HaLevi says there's a general connection between these two events and between the Chorban of Bayit Rishon and the Chorban of Bayit Sheni. That the spies is connected to Bayit Sheni, that's connected to Sanat Chinam, and that we spoke about in the past. Shavasa B'Tammuz is connected to Bayit Rishon, and let's try to understand why that would be. The most well-known reasons ascribed for the Chorban of Bayit Rishon is Gilui Arayot, Shfichat Damim, and Avodah Zarah. If you want to see it, if it's written, it works better for you. Source number two, the Gemara in Yoma, Mikdash Rishon Ibn Macharav, Ibn Shahoyu Bo Shloshat Dvarim, Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayot, Shfichat Damim. Why are these sins so predominant? And incidentally, if you paid attention to the Haftorah this morning, you see that there are other reasons that the Navi liked as well. But the Navi was willing to point at other reasons. Chazal focus on these reasons. These three sins are special. I assume that we all know that for Jews, mitzvot are very often suggestions, and they're negotiable. And there are situations that we go against what it says in Torah, because we have more high-arching considerations, namely B'chai Bahem. B'chai Bahem, Yom Kippur is an important day, a person has to fast on Yom Kippur. Somebody, and now the question is, how ill they need to be to eat on Yom Kippur, and I'm specifically using this example, then a person is ill, they eat on Yom Kippur. But you're supposed to fast, doesn't make a difference, B'chai Bahem. That wins out, you should live. And I continue all kinds of reasons why we would break a fast in such a situation. This year, being that Tisha B'Av is a Nidcha, it is much, much easier to break the fast. I will say or advise to go to your local Orthodox rabbi if there is a situation, and not to your doctor. The doctors are too frum in Yerushalayim, and they're too machmir. And if there are any doctors here, I apologize. If you're not here, I don't. But on a fast day like this, which is a nidcha, a person doesn't feel well. I'm not qualifying any further than that. They can break the fast because we have this tradition of b'chai b'hem. And over here, as I said, it's even much, much less. If somebody comes to you and says, and you've heard this so many times, and I don't know why it is, but rabbis always use cheeseburgers as their example. Somebody can write a paper on this analyzing rabbis' desires. That if somebody comes to you, puts a gun to your head and says, eat this cheeseburger or I'll kill you, then you eat the cheeseburger. And there is, by the way, machloket, even if you make a bracha on the cheeseburger. It could very well be that you're allowed to eat, you're supposed to eat, you make a bracha on it. As I said, that is subject to a machloket. No, you cannot pay somebody to force you to eat it. That is inappropriate. But when it comes to three particular sins, at that point, we're told, no, this is no longer negotiable, and at that point, a person has to sacrifice their life. That's the Gemara, which is made famous, or the passage made famous in the Gemara, and Daf Ayin Dalet is in Hedrin, source number three. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yotzadak, Nimnu v'gamru, which is interesting. They gathered, they stood to be counted, it was voted upon. Ba'aliyat Beit Natzah Belud, which by the way gives us a suspicion that maybe it was a secret meeting taking place. Normally meetings don't take place in an attic, so maybe it was during some time of war. They gathered, they voted in this attic. Kol Averot Shebetorah, Im Omrim La'adam Avor Va'al Taharog. Someone said, all the mitzvot in the Torah, that someone says you should break this or be killed, Yavor V'le'arik. A person should break it and should not be killed. Chutz, with the following exceptions, Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayot, V'Shvichut Damim. Which therefore tells us that these are called sometimes the cardinal I'm not sure why, sins. But this tells us that what the Jews did to destroy the first temple were the very things that one has to give up their life for. And these are the sins which they ended up committing. Now, what does Shivasar B'Tammuz have to do with the destruction of the first temple? Source number 4, we read one isolated verse about the Egel Azav, the Feta Egel. V'yashkimu mimacharat, which you have to, again, give the Jews a great amount of credit. They got up early in the morning. I mean, even Benjamin Franklin thought this was a good thing to do. V'yashkimu mimacharat, they have a lot of exuberance, they wanted to get up early. V'ya'alu olot, they brought offerings. V'yagishu shlamim, v'yeshev ha'am le'echol, they sat down to eat. V'shatu, which has an implication of becoming intoxicated. V'yakumu l'tzachek, and they got up and they made merry. And again, just to understand the profound mistake that was made, the truth is they got almost everything right. This was a day they really should have brought olot, and they should have brought shlamim. This was a day they really should have served God, and this was a day that they should have eaten and drank and partied and be happy and dance and all these things. But their one mistake was is they were supposed to wait for Moshe to come down, because this day was supposed to be Simchat Torah. Right? When we're told that the fast days will become holidays, this holiday is supposed to be Simchat Torah. Simchat Torah, people drink a little too much, people actually eat very late, but they know they eat too much as well, and they're happy and they dance and so on. All of this was right. But they made the slight mistake of choosing the Egel instead of choosing Moshe. And by the way, it is to me at least phenomenally interesting that when Moshe does come down, at least the second time, Moshe starts to glow. And Moshe, when he glows, looks, at least in my opinion, very much like a golden calf. So as I said, they were so close, but sometimes being close doesn't really get there. And then, by the way, the response seems to be, oh, you thought Moshe was just a man? Moshe Ha'ish? Moshe's not just a man. Moshe's far more than that. Rashi tells us, litzachek, they made merry, they partied. Yesh b'mashma hazeh giluy arayot. So Rashi is telling us that a party broke out, but not just a party broke out, an orgy broke out. Rashi's basically saying that, you know, we have hundreds of thousands, this is Woodstock. That's what Rashi is saying. And they were also guilty of murder. Now, it could be that these various things are floating someplace in your minds, but what Rashi is telling us is, despite the fact that some people debate whether the Egel has, this is, by the way, an unbelievable debate, whether the Egel Hazav was really Avodah Zarah. By the way, I don't know why to have such a debate. I know why people would claim otherwise, because we want to defend the Jews. And sometimes we want to defend the Jews because of what the non-Jews are saying, and sometimes you have to be very careful about this, and there's a lot to say about this, including the Rashbam's, in my opinion, very weak defense of the Jews not really being involved in the sale of Yosef. I'm going to come back to that. But of course they're guilty of idolatry. God just said, and even if you minimize the Ten Commandments that they heard, the revelation, they only heard the first two. I'm God, took you out of Egypt, don't make any graven images. Well, guess what? They just make a graven image and said, this took us out of Egypt. You can't get out of the way that they just now profoundly not only broke Avodah Zarah, it's not only idolatry which they did. They went absolutely against the two commandments they heard directly from God. There's no room to move over here. But Rashi just made it worse. Because Rashi said, oh, you thought they were just guilty of idolatry. Again, and I can get ready for that defense. They didn't really know. They were brought up in Egypt, and we tend to pray the way that we saw our environment praying, and it affects, and I can give whole anthropological and sociological defense of why they worshipped the golden calf. And Rashi is blowing that out of the water over here and making a comment. What's his comment? He's saying, oh yeah, they were also guilty of two other sins at the same time. They were also guilty of Gilei Arayot and Shfichut Damim. They also killed Chor. now. It could be that we don't remember so much about that, and that also we'll come back to. But all that doesn't bother me, because everything I just now said was predictable. Three bad sins, destruction of the first temple, Cheta Egel, and all of this, it just works. It was very easy, right? You all appreciate it. Everything I did now was very easy, right? Yes? Yes. What bothers me is Rashi two psukim before. Source number 6. Egel Masicha, they made an egel. Kaven shehis shlichu lakur, bo machshefe Erev Rav. Okay, now we pulled out the Erev Rav. Sha'alui mahimi mitzrayim, va'asu bikshafim. V'yesh omer micha hayasham. I'm not going to get involved with micha now. Sh'yatsa mitoch mosir binyan, sh'nit'amech bo b'mitzrayim, v'yibadosham. V'tas sh'katav bo Moshe, alei shur, la'alot arono shel Yosef, mitoch nilus. V'yishlichu l'toch ha'koresh, v'yatsa ha'egel. So Rashi just now, just to get the simple level of Rashi said, Rashi is claiming here that we have some really bad people. That's the heir of Rav. That's the ones we're going to claim. Of course, by the way, in today's world, I don't know how much you read of certain religious literature that the big argument is who the heir of Rav is today. You have everybody pointing fingers at everybody else because we love one another. So everybody else becomes the heir of Rav today. So the Erev Rav conveniently are always there that we can blame them. So the Erev Rav are the ones who did this, but they used magic. So for all the Harry Potter fans, so there was magic over here, and the magic was that it said on this piece, Alei Shor, and they take this magic and they throw it in, and suddenly, Yatsa HaEgel is there. The reason why this Midrash is brought by Rashi is because, to some extent, Aaron, in his narrative, tries to defend himself, and he says, "V'yatsa ha'egel hazeh." The eagle came out, as if, you know, he had nothing to do with it. "V'yatsa ha'egel hazeh." The eagle came out. So how did "V'yatsa ha'egel hazeh"? There was some magic. Somebody had this thing, threw it in. It said, "Alei shor, shor, come up, alei shor." Now. This is what bothers me, and everything else we'll be talking about today is to try to deal with this question. What in the world did poor Yosef have to do to get dragged into the Cheta Egel? I mean, we can blame Yosef for all kinds of things if you want to. He's actually, by the way, one of the good guys. But why is Yosef being brought into this? Moreover, what Rashi's referring to over here is another midrash. We'll see the psukim where the midrash get it from. It's another midrash which describes the moment when the Jews leave Egypt. Or the moment right before they leave Egypt. Now, one of the things they've been promised all the way from the beginning, Gamata Goy Dan Anochi, I'm going to judge those people. One of the things they've been told is they're going to go Beruchush Gadol. They're going to go and they're going to take a great deal of goods with them. Which means during their slavery, they perhaps had this wish, this dream, this fantasy, that at the end of the day, they're going to get paid for all the hard work that they're doing. And by the way, this is one of the things that Jews have been able to do, and as far as the Ramban is concerned, it's one of the major elements of the Jewish spirit, is our ability to suffer for an ideal and our ability to be involved in a really long-term investment. I'm not going to talk about economics, but very often people that need to respond immediately to the market and pull out immediately are the ones who are going to lose their money. But the ones who are able to ride and to see the long-term investment are able to have a different type of response. The long-term investment over here was something Esav was never interested in. Esav was delighted to sell his birthright. Vayivez Esav et ha-bechora. He detested the role of the firstborn, because what did it mean to be firstborn? To fulfill the covenant that God had with Abraham. What's the covenant? The covenant is, you get the land of Israel, but there is a little detour. What's the detour? You're going to be slaves for 400 years. That's a long-term investment. 400 years of slavery, you get the land of Israel. Esav wants no part of it. And Esav's entire personality is one of immediate gratification. Yaakov is willing to look into it. So I can then imagine how over the years the Jews are slaves and they're waiting and they're waiting and they're waiting. They're going to get paid at the end. When the moment comes, when they're about to leave, everyone goes and borrows money, everybody goes and takes goods, and I use the word borrow, and I use it very loosely, because the Egyptians are too happy to give it. The Egyptians are essentially, take this and get out. You know, we don't want to see you anymore. Just go. Just go. Take what you want and go. Since they were given presents, go. That was it. And that's how we get to the very end of the slavery. And that's what everybody's doing except for one person. And again, I'm reading to you a midrash right now. So first, let me back up one step. First problem. When it says Alei Shor, does it say that any place in the Torah, Alei Shor? The answer is yes and no. In Bereshit, in source number 7, Ben Parat Yosef Ben Parat Alei Ayin Benot Tzada Alei Shor. That's not Shor, it's Shor. It's not Alei with the Hey, it's Alei with the Yud. Yeah, it says the words Alei Shor, but it doesn't say Alei Shor. A matter of fact, Alei Shor, at least according to Rashi, there's a number of interpretations in the Midrash, it says that Yosef was so good-looking that all the girls used to climb the walls to take a peek at him. That's what Alei Shor means. On the other hand, Yosef is referred to as a Shor in Devarim, Yosef Amar, source 8, the Rosh Yosef HaKavkad Nizir Efav, B'chor Shoro Hador Lo V'Karni Ra'im Karnav. So Yosef is a Shor, but the word Alei Shor, which means the Midrash here that talked about Moshe throwing in this magical thing is based upon something that it doesn't actually say. If you look at source number 9, it describes the scene. V'yikach Moshe et atzmot Yosef imo, ki hishbeya hishbiya b'nei Yisrael le'mor, pakod yifkod elokim etchem v'alitem et atzmot ze itchem. Yosef is carried out by Moshe, because there was a vow that was made. Now, I'm going to remind you of one thing, but here is when we're going to start to get a lot broader. What is the significance that Moshe takes out Yosef? And there are a number of midrashim that speak about this. One level of looking at it is, look, everyone else is going for the money, but Moshe goes for Yosef. But there is much more than that. It's much deeper. It's not just that there's a mitzvah to be done that Moshe grabs. As and I said, that's what some midrashim say. There's a much deeper point. The deeper point is that there is some level of reconciliation taking place right now. And in order to understand it, we need to understand the tribal affiliation. Yosef, of course, is from the tribe of Yosef. Moshe comes from the tribe of Levi. Levi and Yosef never did get along. In order to understand this, let's go back and let's look at, as I said, the broader context, and that is Mechirat Yosef. And I'm going to read it through quickly and make comments as we go. Source number 11. V'yeshev Yaakov be'eretz Megure Aviv be'eretz Kanan. Yaakov settles. At least that's what he thinks. Ela told that Yaakov, these are the generations of Yaakov, Yosef. That means the child who Yaakov feels most connected to is Yosef. Those of you who didn't know it, we come from a dysfunctional family. Could be that will make a lot of you feel better. Ela told ot Yaakov, Yosef ben Shvasre Shana, haya ro'eh et achiv batzon, which is a very funny phrase, v'hu nar et b'nei Bilha et b'nei Zilpa nishe aviv, v'yove Yosef et dibatam ra'ah el avihim. This is a very difficult verse, but let's understand the power structure, the difficulty, and the terrible thing that Yosef just now did. First of all, Yosef is loved. How do you know Yosef is loved? The next verse, V'Yisrael Ahavit Yosef Mikol Banav. And we're going to pause. Yaakov loves Yosef. Why does he love him? And I'm going to deviate from what the Chumash says. I apologize. Yaakov had children from 4 different women. One of those women he loved, and the other one he loved almost as much as the first one, but I think all of you can recognize that doesn't cut it. He loved Rachel, and therefore he loves Yosef. But if you're going to have children from 4 different women, and you're going to live together in one camp, you're going to have a complicated life. two of these women are considered wives, two of these women are considered concubines. So therefore, if there's this status, you have Yosef, favored son, children of Leah, children of another wife, next level, and then the children of the concubines on the lowest level. What does Yosef do? Yosef befriends the children of the concubines, thereby elevating them. Now, how was this taken by the children of Leah? They saw this as something which was incredibly cynical and self-serving, because no matter what Yosef does, he's still going to be the favorite child. And that's the next verse, Yaakov loves Yosef. So what Yosef does is he lifts up the status of the children of Bilhah and Zilpah. So who are the ones who just now lost their status by doing this? The children of Leah. What the children of Leah are going to do, by the way, along the line, is they're going to reach out to the children of Bilhah and Zilpah, and they're going to befriend them, and then forge an entire plot against Yosef. And once the other children are accepted by the biggest mass, which are the six children of Leah, at that point they feel that they made it, and therefore Yosef becomes isolated. But the whole struggle over here is between the children of the four different wives, Yosef, favorite child status, children of Leah slightly less, children of Bilhah and Zilpah less. What are we told over here Yosef does? Yosef goes and tells on the children of Leah when they make fun of the children of Bilhah and Zilpah. Yosef, as far as he's concerned, is doing something wonderful. But as I said, the family dynamics in a dysfunctional family can be quite complicated at times. Yosef is loved by Yaakov ki ben zekunim hu, which is a funny term, is used today to denote a youngest child. That's not what it means here. It's because ben zekunim over here means, ben, like the uncle says, ben chakim. He's intelligent, he's smart, he's so capable. Yosef is one of the most capable people in all of Tanakh. Yaakov loves him for his brilliance, he loves him for his capability, but I'll tell you a secret. He would have loved him if he wasn't capable as well. He loves him because he's Rachel's son. And he makes him a ketonet pasim, which all of us know has a very, very regal sense about it. V'yurachav ki ato ahav avihem mikol echav. What do they see? They see he has favorite child status. V'yisna'u oto v'lo yichlu dabru l'shalom. So that's the beginning of it. Yaakov loves Yosef. What price does he pay for it? The others hate him. And then we start the dreams. V'echalom Yosef chalom v'geid l'achav v'yasifo otzna oto. Yosef has dreams, and they hate him even more. So let me remind you of something. Yosef and the brothers, as far as we know, are shepherds. Yosef has a dream about vegetation. There's a very old tension that exists between farmers and between shepherds, or you can go cowboys, or good. One is connected to land. You can't be a farmer unless you're connected to the land. The other wanders around like the Bedouin, going from place to place, wherever it is convenient at that particular moment. The brothers do wander. How do we know they wander? In the very next scene, where are they with their flock? They're all the way near Shechem. They're all the way up north. Why? Because they have places to graze. They go and they wander from place to place. They're not connected to the land. Yosef's dream is a completely different dream. Yosef's dream is one of vegetation. We'll continue a little bit. Of course, the other part of the dream is that you will end up, your stalks will bow down to my stalks. They're obviously outraged. Are you going to be the king over us? Are you going to rule over us? And they hated him even more. Second dream, jealousy, and so on. Pasuk Yud Bet. V'yichu achav lerot et son avim b'shchem, which is a funny place to return to. V'yom Yisrael Yosef lo achecha. And notice, your brothers. Yaakov doesn't realize the dysfunctionality, or im b'shchem. L'cha v'eshlachecha le'im v'yomer lo hineini. You'll go? Sure. V'yomer lo lech na re'e et shlom achecha v'et shlom hatzon v'ashivenu davar. One of the things Yosef gets in trouble for is telling on his brothers. Yaakov is fine with this. Yaakov facilitates this. Go, tell me what they're doing. By the way, you notice the others are shepherds and his job is to oversee them. Take a look what's going on. Favorite son. Rashi comments there that this came from the very depth of Chevron, which means where Avram is buried, where the Brit Beinat Parim is now going to come to fruition. In case you're wondering if it was the hand of God, Yosef gets lost along the way. Men tend not to ask for directions. The guy says to him, "Are you lost?" And Yosef says, "Vayomer et achai anochi mivakesh." And by the way, that is such a painful sentence because that goes through the rest of his life. That's what Yosef wants. Yosef wants the relationship with his brothers. Yosef doesn't like when the sons of the concubines are isolated. Yosef wants to be together with them. Yosef wants all of them to live together, but of course, the difficulty is that he's the favorite son, so it's easy for him to say, "Let's all live together." He wants his brothers. So, do you know where they are shepherding? He went and they heard him talking, whatever, they went to Dotan, which anybody, if you're wondering where Dotan is, it's not such a nice place either today. Shechem is not such a nice place. Dotan is Jenin. They see him from afar. Before he even gets there, they plot his murder. And that's very important because only two are speaking. Ish el achiv. Two brothers are speaking. Who are those two brothers? So I'll make this easy for you. The two brothers are Shimon and Levi. Later on, in source 12, Yosef will separate Shimon from the other brothers. It says that Shimon says, why? Who hishlichol libor? He's the one who threw them into the pit. Who sha'amar lelevi? Hinei balach alamot lezeba. The two that plotted his murder were Shimon and Levi. By the way, why Shimon and Levi? First of all, they're sons of Leah. Why else Shimon and Levi? They're the ones in this very same area, in the area of Shechem. They heard when they were coming from the field about their sister's situation, and they solved the situation based upon murder. Once you turn to murder to solve your problems, apparently this becomes an acceptable way of solving your problems. Shimon and Levi were guilty by Shechem. Shimon and Levi are the ones who were speaking. Shimon and Levi are the ones who plot Yosef's murder. Shimon and Levi are the ones who talk about it. Shimon is the one who throws him into the pit. Levi is the co-conspirator. So I'm getting a little ahead of myself. The fact that Moshe from Levi takes Yosef out of the Nile and carries him out of Egypt is something which is very significant. Okay. Hold that. My sense, though, is that the brothers may see something within Yosef which is far worse. And that's something that we need to appreciate. The brothers see the very worst in Yosef all the way through from beginning to end. From the first time we meet them to the very, very end. When I say the very, very end, when they come back from the funeral, they say something which is either true or not. They're scared. They're scared even then that Yosef is going to kill them all. They never trusted him. Again, after all those years living together, they never trusted him. They saw within Yosef something which was devious and something which was dangerous. And maybe we can understand this based upon the dream and based upon a very simple association which is normally not made. Source number 14, we have another set of brothers. Actually, this is the first set of brothers. V'adam yod chavi ishto v'tar v'tiledet kain v'tomer kaniti ish et Hashem. Hevel was a shepherd. The Kain haya oved adamah. And Kain was the one who works the ground. Kain, of course, gives his offering. Hevel gives his. God accepts Hevel, doesn't accept Kain. One needs to study that section. We had a class on this early in the year. Pasuk ched v'yomer Kain el achiv. Vayihi biyotam bisadeh, vayokam kain al hevel achiv v'yargehu. in a field, some conversation, we don't know what was said, Cain kills Hevel. And as far as I can tell, the brothers were absolutely convinced that Yosef was just like Cain, and they're like Hevel. Hevel was a shepherd, they're shepherds, but Yosef has dreams of working the ground. Who worked the ground? That's Cain. Cain kills Hevel. As far as they're concerned, this is self-preservation. Yosef is evil. They see Yosef as evil and dangerous. Unless you don't understand that point, you don't understand what they're doing. Again, the Torah says they hate him. They're jealous of him. That's the starting point. When you hate someone and you're jealous of someone, you then create an entire narrative to justify the terrible behavior of what you're going to do. They plot to kill him back in source 11, Pasuk Yud Chet. They see him from afar. Let's kill him. Vayomer ish el achiv, hinei ba'alach alamot lezeba. Shimon says to Levi, here he comes. Vata lechu v'nargeu v'nashacheu v'chad abarot v'amarnu chayir achlatu v'nir mayil chomotav. Let's take him. Let's kill him. Shimon and Levi are the ones who plot. But then something interesting happens. And to understand what happens is also very significant in this story. Source 15, Reuven, who's the oldest, who has never been that successful, gets involved. He actually says one thing and is thinking something else, which is unfortunate, because perhaps he could have stopped them. Vishma Reuven v'etzilei miyadam v'yamalo nakenu nafesh. No, we're not going to kill anybody. But what does he say? Let's throw him in the pit. And if we throw him in the pit, he'll die of natural causes. Murder is very messy. Throw him in the pit, he dies by himself. But now we're told what he's thinking, that he wanted to get him back. I mean, the big question then is what happens to him? Why doesn't he go and do it? Rashi gives two interpretations. One interpretation is that he went back, it was his turn to serve his father that day, so he goes back to his father, which by the way is preposterous. He goes back to his father, why not just take Yosef with him? This turns out, I mean, you leave Yosef in the pit, go to take care of your father, and then come back and Yosef is in the pit the whole time? I mean, again, it just doesn't make sense. Rashi's second interpretation is the one that my wife likes. It says that he was busy praying. So whenever something's important to be done, so then men are off praying. And this is the deep reason why Muslims pray five times a day, because they have multiple wives. Okay. But it was what he was praying. He was praying that he suddenly realized that he had made a mistake. And this is Rabbi Soloveitchik's point. He suddenly realized that he made a mistake, that he moved his father's bed, got involved in his father's life. And it was this chutzpah that he had against his father that now the brothers feel they can do whatever they want. Which means even Esav said to Yaakov, I'm going to kill him after your father's dead. That they're willing and plotting to kill disturbs Reuven terribly, but he realized he has some guilt in this. But again, Reuven is never successful. Don't kill him. Let's throw him in a pit. Now, what happens next, I don't think has ever properly been understood. I know that's a very big sentence to say. What happens next, they throw him in the pit. Pasuk Yud Kaf Gimel. V'yi kasher bo Yosef elachav yafshito et Yosef et kutno et kutno et hapasim asher alav. They strip him at least of this coat. V'yikachoyu v'shlecheu oto habora. They throw him into the pit. They sit down and they have a meal. Later on, the brothers are going to say, all these terrible things came upon us because we heard our brothers cry. Yosef is screaming in the pit. He's terrified. He's screaming. And they're, you know, can you pass the hummus over here? And they're busy having a meal. I've said a number of times, I believe that this is why the Jews need to have a meal before they leave Egypt. And you gather the whole family together. We went down to Egypt as a fractured family. We need to gather as a family before we can leave. So on and so forth. They see Yishmaelim coming. Listen carefully. As far as the brothers are concerned, this is a sign from God. This is This is their mother, their grandmother. This is Sara Imenu communicating to them. How? Because when there was a little intrigue in the family, what does Sara say? Yishmael, he's not part of your family. Get rid of him. Having at this moment the Ishmaelim coming by, they see as a sign from God. Perfect. Let's give him to the Ishmaelim. By the way, if that's not enough, something else happens right afterwards. Vayavru anashim midyanim socharim. Everybody's confused. Midyanim, what is it? The midyanim? Is it the Ishmaelim? Who's Midyan? Sorry for such a hard question. Midyan happens to be one of Avraham's children. When Avraham has new children subsequently, Midyan is one of them. And what does Avraham do with the children of the concubines? He sends them away. The brothers are sitting there watching this, and there's a sign from Sarah, a sign from Avraham, get rid of Yosef. We don't have to kill him. We could just get rid of him. That's the sign of Ishmael, and that's the sign of Midian. Get rid of him. And so they do. So who do we have here? We have Yosef. We have Yehuda, the main protagonists. Yehuda is the one who says to sell him. Yosef is the victim. Those are our main protagonists. We have Shimon and Levi on the side over here. They're the ones who are ready to kill. Reuven is the one who fails. And there's one problem with their perfect plan. The one problem is when they have to go and tell their father, oh yeah, by the way, that kid Yosef, that annoying, terrible person, oh, they don't put it that way, do they? They don't even have the guts, actually, to say. They send a message. They say, do you recognize this? Source 16. Vayikira vayomar ktonit b'ni chayara achvatu taraf taraf Yosef. Yosef was ripped into pieces. Vayikra Yaakov simlotav. Yaakov rips his clothing. Vayasim sak b'motnav v'itabel ol bano yamim rabim. And how annoying this is, because Yaakov couldn't just forget about it. This annoying son that he once had. Yaakov actually loved him, and Yaakov can't help but mourning him for a very long time. Now, this is going to sound like a very small point. In theology and in mysticism, and in mysticism of redemption, this is a very large point, what I'm about to say. In source number 17, the Gemara makes a rare reference to an individual who's almost never discussed. It talks in the Gemara in Sukkah about mourning which is taking place, terrible crying mourning. V'hai hespeda mai avidite, what is this mourning about? Pligei bo Rabbi Dosev Rabbanan chad amar al Mashiach ben Yosef shenherag. The mourning that takes place is this because of Mashiach ben Yosef who was killed. Now, I want to stop here for a second. Most of us do not really know what Mashiach ben Yosef is or what it's all about. We always talk about Mashiach ben David. There's going to be mourning, we're told, take place because Mashiach ben Yosef is killed. So despite what the Gemara said, it sounded like it was black and white. At least starting with the Arizal, I don't know if it's before that. This was something which the Vilna Gaon was so fond about. There's a whole book of redemption based on the Vilna Gaon's teaching, which is based on this point. And this point is that Mashiach ben Yosef doesn't die. If he doesn't die, why are they mourning? So what's the answer? Because they think that he died. Why do they think that he died? Well, just like for a long time, Yaakov thought that Yosef was dead. So I'm going to pause here again. We have the death of Yosef at the hands of Yehuda. But of course, you know the secret because you know where the story ends up. And that is that he really is not dead. But Yaakov thinks that he's dead. And then we have the mourning for Mashiach ben Yosef, who's going to die, but he doesn't have to die. If you look in some Sidurim, especially Sephardic Sidurim, that has some Kabbalistic intonations, on the line, V'chisei David Avdecha, it says, have in mind that Mashiach ben Yosef won't be killed. I mean, that's how strong this tradition of the Arizal is, that Mashiach ben Yosef shouldn't be killed. Which means, as we end the book of Bereshit, and I'm going to come back, as we end the book of Bereshit, we have our Yosef, who is this prototype of our Mashiach ben Yosef, or whatever Yehuda, who's going to be the prototype of Mashiach ben David, who somehow is going to have to straighten himself out. We have Levi and Shimon and Levi, who seem to really not do good things, although there is a difference. They conspire. Shimon does it. Levi agrees. And they're the ones who conspire, and they're the ones who wipe out Shem. So I want to go back to my question now. Levi and Yosef did not get along. The fact that Moshe goes out of his way the moment before they leave Egypt and goes looking for Yosef when everyone else is looking for money is an unbelievable tikkun. This is a moment of reconciliation between Yosef and Levi. This is historic. Rabbi Soloveitchik made that point as well. This is a historic reconciliation that Moshe's going out for Levi, and my question, that Moshe's going out for Yosef, my question now is again, so why was the Midrash that talks about Moshe going to save Yosef, which again, it's in the verse itself, but the Midrash explains he didn't know where to find him, and who's the one who tells him? This part you should know. Serach Bat Asher is the one who remembers where Yosef is. She tells him he's buried in the Nile. Moshe goes to the Nile. Yosef, it's time to go. No movement. By the way, Moshe could have said, okay, I tried. Again, it's time to go. That's where we get to the magic. He writes on something, Aleh Shur, throws him to the Nile. And Yosef's Aron comes out. And Moshe then carries the Aron of Yosef out as the Jews leave. That's beautiful. Again, it's reconciliation. It's historic. So why in the world was the same words used to drag Yosef into the sin of the golden calf? And that's what's so disturbing. Continue. This group of people, and I'm going to say it again now, this group of Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David, they make an appearance in Sefer Shemot at a place that maybe you didn't notice when it was happening. But that leads us back to somebody who's missing. Remember Rashi said the Jews were guilty of three sins, idolatry, an orgy, and murder. It says they killed Hor. So who is this Hor that they killed? In source number 19, when Moshe is about to go up, he says, "Ve'el zekinim amar, shuvu lanu b'zeh ad asher nashuv aleichem." Wait here till I come back. "V'nei Aaron v'chor imachem, Aaron and Hor, they're the ones in charge. Mi bal devarim, igash eleihem. Whoever has some problems, go to them." So now, where do we see Hor actually doing something? And that's in source 18. But let's pay very careful attention to who's involved. Vayomer Moshe el Yehoshua, b'char lenu anashim v'tzei lechem b'Amalek. This is the war against Amalek. Who goes and fights? Yehoshua is the one who goes down below and fights. Tzei lechem b'Amalek machar, anochi nitzav al rosh ha-giv'ah, matei Elokim b'yadi. Vayas Yehoshua kashamar lo Moshe, v'lechem b'Amalek, u'moshe v'aron v'chur alu rosh ha-giv'ah. V'yakashe yarim Moshe yado v'gavar Yisrael, v'kashe yaniach yado v'gavar Amalek. Bidei Moshe kvedim v'chu evin v'yisimu tachtav v'yeshav aleim v'aron v'chur tamchu b'yadav mizeh v'achad mizeh mizeh achad v'yadav emunah bo ha'shemesh v'echalosh Yehoshua et Amalek v'et amo l'fi charev. Who is the group over here who are involved? The person actually fighting is Yehoshua. What tribe does Yehoshua come from? From Ephraim, from Yosef. This is the prototype of Mashiach ben Yosef. Mashiach ben Yosef is involved in the physical, which, by the way, is one of the reasons he'll always be looked at in a cynical or a jaundiced eye, because we look for our spiritual heroes. You know, Yosef was quite accomplished. Yosef was a businessman. Yosef was the great provider. Yosef was the one who took care of their physical needs. Yehoshua is the one who's going down and fighting, but as Yehoshua is fighting below, Moshe's above praying, but Moshe's connected to two people. One on his right hand, one on his left hand. Who are the two people who are uplifting him? Significantly, Aaron, the man who will become Kohen, the man who will become Kohen Gadol. And the other one is Hur, from the tribe of Yehuda, the one who would be king. Malchut Yehuda starts with Hur. The problem with Malchut Yehuda starting with Hur is it didn't work out very well. When Moshe goes up, as we saw, what did he say? Anybody has any problems, speak to Hur, speak to Aaron. So they come to Hur. And they say to Hur, make for us an eagle. What does Hur say over my dead body? What do they say? Fine. Hur tries to stop them. The pasuk in Eicha, which the Gemara is going to use, in source 20, Re'e Hashem v'bita l'mi alalta ko im tochalna nashim piryam olele tipuchim, which is the worst image imaginable of the Chorban. But where does that come from? Im yehareg b'mikdash Adonai kohen v'navi. It's the murder of a kohen and navi which leads to this. Rashi, source 21, Vayomer chad l'Hashem achar u'midrasho b'vayikur rabba d'vrim harbe ra'a Aaron. It says Aaron saw ra'a Hur ben achoto sheyam mochicham. He gave them tochecha v'herguhu, and they murdered him. V'zehu, and that's what the verse refers to, v'yiven mizbeach lefanav, an altar was built in front of him, v'yiven mizivoach lefanav, he built it because of the one who was slaughtered in front of him. But all of this is really based upon a Gemara in Source 22, Gemara in Sanhedrin. Upligid Rabbi Tanchum bar Chanilai, the Amar Rabbi Tanchum ben Chilai, lo nemar mikraze ela keneged maase ha'egel. The verse that we just now saw in Eicha, we're told, no, that goes all the way back to the Chet ha'egel. Shenemar vayaron vayiven mizbeach lefanav mara'a, Amar Rabbi Nehemiah ben Yefet, Amar Rabbi Lezer, ra'achur shezavuach lefanav. He sees Hur was murdered. Amr, Elosha Manaluhu Hashta, Avduleke Avdu Bachur. If I don't listen to them, they're going to do to me what they did to Hur. Umekayim bi, and they're then going to fulfill the verse, Im Yehareg b'mikdash Hashem Kohen v'Navi, that they will have murdered a Kohen and Navi. And by the way, Kohen, Hur is not the Kohen yet. Yeah, he is a Kohen. And I'll tell you another thing. Hur is not Melech yet, or Navi as called over here, but he really is. The job of Hur coming from Yehuda is he was supposed to be the beginning of Malchut Beit David. Of course, it's not David yet, it's Malchut Beit Yehuda. By the way, you realize what's interesting? They tried to kill Mashiach ben Yosef, but they didn't kill him. But now we realize, by the Chet HaEgel, they did kill somebody who was from Mashiach ben David, but Mashiach av David, if you will. Once you realize that these are the two tribes you need to keep your eyes on, certain things will become very clear. For example, in source number 23, who were the two renegade spies? I call them renegade because they're the ones who didn't listen to the other 10. Ulamate Yehuda Kalev ben Yefuneh. Ulamate Ephraim Hoshea ben Nun. These are the two. Mashiach ben David, Mashiach ben Yosef, or if you will, Mashiach av David, Mashiach av Mashiach ben Yosef. This is where it comes from. Yehoshua's job is going to be to capture the land of Israel, to settle the land of Israel. David's job and Shlomo's job, who's Shlomo? Ben Mashiach ben David. Why do I call him Mashiach ben David? Because he was the anointed one to be king, who's ben David. He's the one who builds the Beit HaMikdash. The physical is done by Mashiach ben Yosef. The spiritual is done by Mashiach ben David. Who goes down and fights the war against Amalek? Yehoshua ben Yosef. Who's up there supporting Moshe, connected to heaven? That's Hur and Aaron. Kohen Gadol and the Melech are there on top of the hill. What went wrong by the Chet HaEgel? Moshe's up in heaven. Yehoshua is halfway there waiting for him. And the other two? Hur and Aaron. They mess up in completely different ways. And saying Hur messed up is, of course, not fair. Hur was unsuccessful in stopping them. And then Aaron was very unsuccessful in stopping them. But you realize now that the Chet HaEgel has the same characters as Milchemet Amalek had. But of course, with very, very different results. And the biggest difference of the results is over here, Yeshua from Yosef. He's fighting, but he's being supported by David. He's being supported by Levi as well. We have those are the tribes that are all working together. And what happens when they work together? We can defeat anybody. And I'm going to go back and say it again. So what happened with the Chet HaEgel, where Hur tries to stop and fails? Aaron doesn't try to stop, because what does he say? If you continue in source 22 at the end, V'lo havayelohu takanta la'olam, they'll never have a tikkun. This will never be fixed. Mutav la'avdu la'egla, it's better for them to worship a calf. If sharhava le'takanta v'tshuva, maybe that they'll be forgiven. If they kill the Kohen Gadol and the Melech, they'll never be forgiven. So Aaron says, better for us to sin, better even to worship an eagle, better that than what, but something went wrong. And I'm going to ask you again. So what went wrong that we're blaming, oh, this was Alei Shur, Yosef. Why is Yosef being blamed for all this? So the answer, which I suspect some of you may have already guessed, is in Source 26. This many years later, there's going to be a Ben Yosef from Ephraim who's going to be a supporter, an advisor of Ben David, and everything's going to work perfectly until everything falls apart. Va'ish Yeravam Gibor Chayil, like Yehoshua, Va'yar Shlomo Etanar Ki Yosef Melacha, Shlomo has an advisor, colleague, warrior, and he puts him in charge of Beit Yosef. Salma is, of course, means a garment, but it also is the clothing of is the name of Shlomo in an anagram. And he rips it into 12. You get 10 parts of it. I'm taking away the kingdom from Shlomo, but I'm giving you 10. This is very complicated. On the one hand, he's giving him 10 tribes. On the other hand, he's saying, I'm not giving it to you permanently. I'm not giving it to you to be the only king. I'm going to skip to Pasuk Lamed Chet. V'ya'im tishma'et kol asher atzavekcha. He said, you only have to do is one thing. Keep and guard the Torah. So over here we have something fascinating. And I'll say that this is already the beginning of maybe what the brothers were concerned about all the time when they saw him. That here we have a descendant of Yosef who was put in a position, and what he chooses, what he's done, what his mandate is, serve God, protect the people, be a good leader. Why? And it's not nice to say. Now, the Gemara says, you're not allowed to say it about David. Kol mi shomer et David chata inu lo toeh. Which, of course, doesn't mean that he didn't sin. It just means you're not allowed to say it. I saw from Rabbi Soloveitchik, he said, because anybody who says that David sinned made a mistake. But if you say David HaMelech sinned, you're absolutely correct. He said for a melech to act the way that he did was wrong. For somebody in a leadership position to act in the way that he did was wrong. I don't think I need to speak more than necessary about rabbis in leadership positions who do things which are wrong, because that's exactly what it seems to work at David, but it's worse when it gets to, worse, we can make a decision. When it gets to Shlomo, at least in terms of pshat, and they have to work very hard to explain the pshat in a different way, it seems to be that we go back to our three sins, and we have David guilty of Gilei Rayot, and we have Shlomo, again, you're not allowed to say that, because there's technicalities and so on, but he tried to. That's the Gemara's conclusion. He tried to, but he didn't realize she was actually divorced. And the divorce was conditional, and he didn't know it, but he tried to sin. So you get some points for trying. That David is guilty of Gilei Rayot, and Shlomo is guilty of Avodah Zarah, and by the way, within the whole family, there's lots of Shvichut Damim as well. You don't have to worry. That's there as well. And God says, okay, we're going to create another kingdom. And this other kingdom I'm giving to Yeravim. But something goes wrong. And what goes wrong is, by the way, as far as I'm concerned, and maybe you'll accuse me afterwards, I could have made the whole shir much shorter. What goes wrong is what we read in source number 27, they continue. Starting Pasuk Kavchet. V'yivin Yeravim et Shechem, Bahar Ephraim. Predictably, he goes back to Shechem. V'yeshev ba v'yetzi misham v'yivin et Penuel. V'yom Yeravim bilo atata shuvam amlecha lebeit David. He goes, the holidays are coming. The Jews are going to make a pilgrimage. They're going to go back to Jerusalem. They're going to serve God in Jerusalem. And when they serve God in Jerusalem, they're going to go back to the family of David. I'm going to get killed. Vayomar leim rav lachem me'alot Yerushalayim, hine Elohecha Yisrael ashalucha me'eretz Mitzrayim. So here we find, finally, the descendant of Yosef building not one egel, but for good measure he builds two egels. Or, egel in plural. Agalim. He builds two of them, and he says, this took you out of Egypt. And, you know, you have to think a second. How did he not know how badly this worked out the first time this was done? But it didn't make a difference. And as far as I can tell, this midrash that Rashi quotes, that Yosef is there by the sin of the eagle, has nothing to do with Yosef, but has to do with the descendant of Yosef, who's going to end up being guilty of this. And what is really going to be the core of this sin? The core of the sin is that he's afraid. He's afraid of the people going back and serving God. And what does it say that he does? It says he makes up a holiday. If you continue there in source 27, V'yosem et achad b'beit el, v'et achad natan bedan, v'yadavar zel achatat, v'yachu am lefnei achad ad dan, v'yas et beit bamot, v'yas kohanim, mikzaot ha'am asher lo hayu b'mnei levi. New kohanim, what do you need levi for? You can different Kohanim. So what? Your father's not a Kohen. Your grandfather's not a Kohen. You could be a Kohen by Yeravam. Vayas Yeravam chad b'chodesh hashmini b'chamisha asar yom l'chodesh 15th day of Cheshvan. And those of you really interested could look it up and you'll realize that Kristallnacht took place on that day. Asher b'yuda vayal mizbeach ken asa v'beit el zabeach lagalim asher asa v'mir b'beit el l'kohonei abamot asher asa. They made up a holiday. Chag l'Hashem Machar. Just like at the foot of the mountain, they made up a holiday and they started worshipping a golden calf. Yeravam makes sure that 10 of the tribes end up worshipping this golden calf as well. And if you really want to see the tragedy, I don't think anybody expressed it better than the Gemara in source 25. Amar Rabbi Abba, Achar shetavsu HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yeravam bivigdo, that God grabbed Yeravam by his clothing, Amar lo, and God said to him, Chazor b'cha, come back, Vani v'ata uven yishai, Nitayel b'gan Eden. Now, before I go any further, I don't know if you can tell, this is a very nice invitation. God is saying, let's go. We're going to go to Gan Eden. Me and you and Ben Yishai. David, Yosef, Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David. We're going to go together, Nitayel v'gan Eden. We're going to take the world and set it all the way back to the way it was supposed to be, and we're going to turn the world back into Gan Eden. The two Mashiachs, that's really what it's saying. Amar lo, he asks him, Yeravam asks God, Umi Barosh? Who's first? By the way, do you realize what an absurd question this is? God is one of the three. Umi Barosh, Amar lo Ben Yishai Barosh. Ben Yishai is first. Yihochi lo Ba'ina. If that's the case, I'm not interested. Which means what Rashi is trying to tell us, and by the way, there's a disconnect here. And I want to explain the disconnect and explain Rashi and then finish up. This was what the brothers always saw when they saw Yosef. They saw Yosef as somebody who wanted power, somebody who wanted to rule over them. They're going to bow down to him. By the way, even when he says, you're going to bow down to my stalks, does he? Yeah, they're going to need food afterwards. They're coming for food. Yosef's dreams come true. They see Yosef as somebody who's power hungry, wants to be in charge. What they never understand is what Yosef is really all about. And Yosef was always the ultimate number two. He was never number one. He's second to his father. He's second to Potiphar. He's second to the warden in prison. And he's second to Paro. And had Yehuda come in, he would have been second to Yehuda as well. Yosef never tried to be number one. They see Yosef incredibly capable, dangerous. That's what happens when you hate somebody. You hate somebody, then you create this whole narrative about how terrible he is. They see Yosef, who is he like? Yosef? He's like the guy who killed Hevel. Yosef is like Cain. This is what Yosef dreams about. When they get him in a field, that's the exact place that Hevel was killed. Now we can take vengeance on Hevel. The brothers think they're tzaddikim, by the way, all the way through. We're tzaddikim. We're taking vengeance on Hevel. We're going to kill Cain. By the way, what's the punishment of Cain after he kills Hevel? He has to wander. He has to become a nomad. He has to become like the shepherd. That's exactly what his punishment is. What do they do to Yosef? They try to sell Yosef. They send him far away. He's not going to be connected to the land. They send him away. Nav v'nad. Send him away. You'll be a slave. Go away. Of course, what happens? They end up being slaves. But what they see in Yosef is something which, according to the Midrash, Yaakov sees as well. He looks at Yosef's children. Mi'ela. Rashi says, he sees Yeruvim. Did Yeruvim come from this? When the brothers see Yosef, they don't see Yosef as... But I want to frame this whole issue in a slightly different way. We're very familiar with a concept which is called Maaseh Avot Tzimun Labanim. Maaseh Avot Tzimun Labanim means that things that happened in the past create an echo, create a situation, a potential, a power, that it can happen in the future. This is not predetermination. We all still have free will. The power of Yeruvam is the same power of Yosef. They don't use it the same way. Yosef, a matter of fact, what was the phrase that it used over here? That God, what did God do? Tafsu HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yeruvam bivigdo. It's the exact same words by Eshet Potiphar. Right? She grabs him bivigdo, which is either his clothing or his rebellion. Maybe Yosef went in to walk on the wild side. But Yosef walks out. Yosef is Yosef, it's Tzaddik. Over here we have, this whole story began with Yeruvam, with this simla which was cut into pieces. Over here he grabs him by the bigdo, he grabs him by the beged. So what are you going to do? Yeruvam is the negative manifestation of all the greatness of Yosef. But Yosef was a positive manifestation of all the greatness of Yosef. And that's why Yosef becomes such a complex character. And over there at the Chet HaEgel, you can see that there is this negativity of Yosef, which is going to cause this division, which is going to cause the Churban Bayit Rishon, eventually is going to end up being disturbed because of this incredible division that takes place, and the people will be guilty of Avodah Zarah, Angilo Reid, and Shvichat Damim, and all that's going to come over again, and it's this negative side. But what Chazal are telling us within the much, much larger picture, that just because there's a negative side to it doesn't mean that the positive side can't be refound. I told you, I don't remember what it was, around 25 minutes ago, that as far as the Vilna Gaon was concerned, this is one of the most important issues in Jewish mysticism and the mysticism involving the Geula. The Vilna Gaon sent his students to Eretz Yisrael, and he said, anybody who comes to Eretz Yisrael and starts to build Yerushalayim is part of a spark of Mashiach ben Yosef. Building Yerushalayim because Yosef in Gematria, this is Midrash already, there's not the Vilna Gaon, Yosef in Gematria is Tzion, Zion. And by the way, every single thing that I said about Yosef is true about Tzion as well. Hated, jealous, loved. They want to attack us. They want to kill us. Maybe they think that they killed us. Maybe they think that we're dead. Old Yosef. Mashiach ben Yosef is the power. Again, this is the Vilna Gaon's theology. Every single one of us here, and most of us have made Aliyah, have chosen to be a part of this role of Mashiach ben Yosef and to build Eretz Yisrael. This is how Rav Kook got so terribly attacked, because he was just quoting the Vilna Gaon, which of course most people didn't realize, when he said that even Herzl could have been a spark of Mashiach ben Yosef, because that's exactly what the Vilna Gaon was saying. And the world can look and say, Yosef is dead, and they can mourn, and Yerushalayim destroyed, and so on, but we come back and we say, Od Yosef Chai. That's not enough. Because what Yosef does is the first part. And if, by the way, according to the Vilna Gaon's understanding, he does 999 of 1,000 parts. But the second part is what the Ben David does. There is Mashiach ben Yosef in the person of Yehoshua who goes to war. Mashiach ben David is up on the hill praying, together with the Kohen Gadol, supporting Torah, which is Moshe. Those three together make us be victorious. Torah, the Kohen, and from Yehuda. By the Cheta Egel, all of this got exploded. It all got exploded. None of this worked. And Yosef gets dragged into it and gets blamed. When we march into the land of Israel, of course there are two tribes only whose leaders saw what all the others didn't do. And that's Kalev, and that is Yosef, Yoshua from Yosef, and from Yehuda. That's not an accident. As I said, that's predictable, that's understandable. Yoshua captures the land, he settles the land, they divide the land, but one thing is missing. What's missing is the Beit HaMikdash, and that we need David. And David does it together with, where, how do they identify Yerushalayim? Together with Shmuel, and which tribe is Shmuel from? Levi. So the two of them together identify. The Shekhinah comes down. They see the Shekhinah up on Har Bayit, even without the Beit HaMikdash. Just like Avram saw it from afar, they see it. They build the Beit HaMikdash. Shlomo completes it. Ben David completes it. That's the prototype. So now we're so far in history. People throughout history could have said, Yosef is dead. Tzion is dead. It's all over. It's not going to happen. And then little sparks of Mashiach ben Yosef come up, and Yerushalayim is bigger and greater than it ever was. But we're missing something still. We're missing that last part, the spirituality, which is led by Mashiach ben David. But maybe in order for that to happen, we're missing something which maybe ties the last two pieces together. It's what Yosef says when he's looking for his brothers at Tochayni Mivakesh. Yosef is looking for his brothers. There needs to be that unity. Without that unity, it doesn't work. And as far as the brothers were still concerned at that point, they were basically mimicking Kayin, HaShomer Achi Anochi. And what was God's answer? Yes. I want to end there's a source here, Emek HaMelech, the really important, he points at Yeravam as being a potential of Mashiach ben David. And he points as well at a pasuk in Yeshayahu. And your homework for today is to go back and read the entire 11th chapter of Yeshayahu. I have it in front of me. I'm going to read a little of it now, and then we'll get to the verse that he quoted. The day is going to come that a descendant of David is going to come. Ruach Hashem, Ruach Chachma, Ruach Etzag, Ruach Dat, Virat Hashem. which, by the way, if you realize it, is a combination of Hur's. Who's the Ben Hur? Who's the Ben Hur? Bezalel, Ben Uri, Ben Hur, the Matei Yehuda. What does he do? He builds the Mishkan. That's exactly the point. That's the Ben Yehuda who builds the Mishkan. The capabilities of Hur and the capabilities of Shlomo are almost identical. And they were both, by the way, according to Midrash, around 12 years old. V'irichu b'yirat Hashem v'lo l'marei nav yishpot v'lo l'mashmai nav yochiach v'shafat tzedek dalim v'ochiach b'mishor lan v'eretz v'yika eretz b'shevet piv uv'ruach sfatav yamid rasha v'yat tzedek ezor matno v'muna ezor chlatzav v'ger ze'ev v'gar ze'ev im keves v'namer im gedi irbatz v'egel kfir mariach dav v'nar katan Nahogbam, which is also fascinating, that maybe only somebody who's younger, who's not cynical yet, who's not jaded yet, is the one who has the vision and the understanding to be able to do this. Uforavadov tir enna yachdav yirbitsu yadeim va'arye kevakar yachal tevin. B'shasha yonek achur peten v'amurot tzfoni gamul yado hara. Lo yoreu v'lo yashchitu b'kol har kadshi kimala aretz deyat Hashem kimayim liyam mechasim. And we'll skip to the last pasuk, well, to pasuk Yud Gimel. Visara kinat Ephraim vitsarare Yehuda yikaretu Ephraim lo yikanet Yehuda v'Yehuda lo yatsur et Ephraim. And then the day is finally going to come that there will be no more jealousy between Ephraim and between Yehuda. Yehuda and Ephraim will be reconciled and be united. And at that point, what do we see in this chapter? That's the Messianic Age. And the only question is, do we have to wait for Mashiach to come and for the lamb and the lion to lie and so on? And then we'll get to the point that Ephraim and Judah are reconciled and work together? Or the question is, are we able to get to that point? And then we'll be able to usher in that last chapter. That's the whole question over here. Yosef is there at the Chet HaEgel because Yosef ends up unfortunately representing this division within the people. This unbelievable division. All the things they were worried about came true. But it didn't come true in Yosef. It came through in Yeravam. This is what you can call a genetic, I don't know what the term, a genetic spiritual aberration. But now the question is, how long have you been living with this aberration? Is the jealousy, the hatred, or do we get this point of the unity? And as I said, we are so close right now. We're here, Mashiach ben Yosef, people can think he died, but we look around and we realize Yerushalayim is built. A couple more buildings need to be built. But in order to build them, we need to get to that point and say, HaShomer Chi Anochi.